Zajrzyj ten rematch do Tesla TV 109 Tesla. Russian Kaplan.
Gases expand. Things always fall to the ground. The laws of gravity. Just like Hakadosh Baruch Hu created the world with laws of nature, which we can see around us in the physical world, so too Hakadosh Baruch Hu created the world with spiritual laws, which govern and are there forever. One example of these spiritual laws, Rashi brings in the Pasuk, he says, Chesed la'alofim la'oyava l'shomri mitzvosai. Mitzvosai. Rashi brings that the Midah Toiva, goodness, is 500 times the amount of bad, of difficulty. The measure of good versus bad is set at a ratio of 500 to 1. That means reward to punishment, pleasure to pain. This is one of the operating principles with which Hakadosh Baruch Hu created the world. The question is, if you ask someone, how's life treating you? And he says, life is great, more than great, fantastic. I enjoy every moment of life, from the moment I wake up until I go to sleep at night. The person would respond in such a manner, you'd think, what planet does he come from? Yeah, there are good times in life, there are pleasant moments, there are pleasures, but to go and say that life is great, more than great, fantastic, from morning till evening, you'd think there's something wrong with him. But Rashi tells us, Chazal tell us, the measure of goodness versus bad is 500 to 1. So how does this tie in with a life that we all know? So every one of us has been through difficulties in life, hardships, unpleasantness. And we look back at our lives, I don't think we would maybe say that our feelings were always that we're nana from life, from morning till evening. So how does the Metzias HaChaim tie in with this Mama Chazal? Another question. It's very clear, absolutely clear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to enjoy life in this world. To bring out this concept, if we imagine for a moment the very moment of creation, nothing exists. The concept of nothing we cannot fathom properly. Because absolute void has no place in our minds. We can't understand what it means. Nothing was there. Even time didn't exist. Time is only in the physical world. Hakadosh Baruch Hu creates the world out of nothing because there is nothing. He creates it from nowhere. There is nowhere. He creates matter, physical matter. He creates life, light and darkness. The heavens, the earth, the stars, the planets. The fish, the birds, the animals. And finally the human being. If we think about it, there's no status quo. There's no model to copy. Hakadosh Baruch Hu created the world from nothing, from nowhere, with no status quo. There was nothing to copy. He could make it any way he wants. There were no givens, no laws of nature. It was completely from scratch. When we think about this point, and we look at the world around us, it is very clear, without a doubt, that Hakadosh Baruch Hu wants us to enjoy life on this world. Hakadosh Baruch Hu created color. The world could have been black and white. The world is full of thousands of different shades of colors. Hakadosh Baruch Hu created human being. Hakadosh Baruch Hu created a creature which needs to eat. If we don't need to eat, then wouldn't be fulfilling the purpose of why we were created. We think we're God. Hakadosh could have created food like soggy cardboard? We look into what type of food HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, we think about it, we're spoiling in it, we see there's tremendous, tremendous detail in every item of natural food. Rabbi Gdemiller, Zechariah Lebracha, used to speak a lot about the orange. If you very carefully open up one slice of orange, peel away the membrane, you'll see all the hundreds of little sacks of juice. And he would say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it in that way. When you bite into it, there's a burst of flavor. All those sacks explode in your mouth. When you put it in your mouth, you don't feel the flavor because all the juice is contained in those sacks. You bite into it, you feel a burst of flavor. The juice is released in a tremendous burst. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have made an orange, this big thick skin, which is waterproof, and just filled it with liquid. He made it in such a way that we can enjoy it. Apples, most apples are red. Procter & Gamble, the big, massive corporate company that produces so many things that we use continuously, they spent millions of dollars on research to determine which color has the greatest eye appeal. And their studies proved that orange containers and red containers result in more sales. That's what they worked out after spending millions of pounds of research. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created us with eyes, and he's created the fruit in colors which make us have a desire for them and enjoy seeing the colors. It's not just the colors, it's the texture as well. Every fruit difference is different in texture. You bite into an apple, you get a crunch, unlike an orange. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made tremendous detail. What? The color, the texture, the smell. When you peel an orange, if you look carefully under sunlight, you'll see, as you peel with your fingers, you don't cut it with a sharp knife, you see a spray of mist coming out of the skin. That spray of mist has the smell of the orange, which helps a person create a greater appetite for that orange. Right? The scientists have worked out that aroma, without smelling food, a person wouldn't half enjoy the food. That's all part of being able to enjoy the food. There's a smell HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us with. Remember, wherever we look in creation, we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu put tremendous detail in designing everything to give us tremendous pleasure. He created us two eyes. We can determine the distance by looking through two eyes. And there's a little bit about the eye. We can just go on and on for hours and hours just describing the human body. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in such a way it should be so easily functional. Like I once saw in a book, HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the big teeth in the front, it'd be very complicated to eat. You'd have to bite it with the back teeth and then chew it in the front teeth and send it back. Everything is designed perfectly, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to enjoy life in this world. So it's very, very clear when we think about that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world without copying any model from scratch. The way he created it makes it abundantly clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to enjoy life on this planet. There's no shaila about it. But again, the question is that most people walk around miserable. I think the most successful pharmaceutical companies in the world, which are making billions of dollars in profit, are the companies producing antidepressant tablets. I think it's the most sold tablet on this planet. So what is going on here? If we're supposed to, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to enjoy it, why can't we enjoy it? We think as well about life today. You might have thought maybe 200-300 years ago it was harder to enjoy life. Think about life today. I mean, not so long ago, my mother, Zain Gesund, told me when she was growing up, they used to go to a bathhouse. Can you imagine every time you want a shower, going to a bathhouse, and you had to pay some money, and if you hadn't finished cleaning yourself, you had to plead with a lady to pour more hot water into the basin above your head. You can't even imagine such a life, which is not so long ago. Right? We live a life of luxury. Electricity, running water, toilets. Life is very luxurious against the way they lived 100 years ago. If you read that book, Alone in the Forest, which describes life on the Holocaust diaries just before the Second World War. Phenomenal. They didn't have flooring. It's not 500 years ago. In pre-war Europe, there are many villages that live without flooring. There was mud on the floor. I'm not talking about 500 years ago, I'm talking about 80, 90 years ago. And she describes the way they lived. I remember as a child always wondering, whenever you see paintings of a few hundred years ago, you see everybody's wearing wigs. I couldn't understand it. Did not have hair. Is hair something new? You see everybody's wearing wigs. And all the pictures, you go into a museum, you'll see the picture of people, even regular people, not judges and barristers in the courthouse. You see, regular people are wearing wigs. And I wondered always, why are they wearing wigs? It's not comfortable to wear a wig. Never understood it. And many years later, I finally worked out the answer. In old times, how many times did they bathe? Not very often. It was complicated. There's no running water in the house. There are bathrooms, showers. They bathed very infrequently. And they bathed so infrequently that lice was so common and impossible to get rid of. That's how people lived, people like us. They weren't different types of human beings. The same human beings as us. We know how we jump when we see one louse in our hair or in front of us, how we echo. It was normal life to live with lice in the hair. That's the way people lived. The only way to circumvent lice was to shave off all your head, all your hair. And that's why people, 200 years ago, all wore wigs because they had no hair. They couldn't have hair because hair meant lice. And that's why we read in history so often about this perfume trade. This was like a major industry, perfume. Why was this a major industry? And the answer is because people washed themselves very infrequently. They used to literally shower themselves with perfume before they went into the street. It was a major, major industry. So we're living a life, we can't imagine this type of life. We have our houses, our cars set to the exact temperature we like it. In the winter we've got heating, in the summer there's air conditioning. Definitely that's Israel. Bnei Brak, you can't live there without air conditioning. But, and even in England, we're living a life of luxury. The supermarkets are stocked full, and wherever you go shopping, everything's heated. And that's always the answer to the question I had when you see the picture of Henry VIII. He looks like Honey Monster with all those layers of clothing he's wearing. And why was he dressed so warm? And he's sitting on his throne. And all the paintings, the pictures in the history books, you see him sitting on his throne with layers and layers of clothing with a pelt on top, as our Rebbe's pelts. What's going on? And the answer is, the mighty King of England was freezing cold in his palace. The little fires he had in his throne room weren't enough to heat the way we heat our houses. We're living in greater luxury than any powerful ruler in the last 2,000 years. If you ever look at an old house that hasn't been touched for 60 years, you'll see there's literally one cupboard upstairs in the bedrooms. How many clothes do they have? Nowadays, you want to go on an outing, you want to go on a holiday with 6, 7 kids, you need a whole suitcase just for shoes. There's weekday shoes, Shabbos shoes, Crocs, sandals, walking shoes, slippers. The list goes on, and every person's got, just think how many pairs of shoes we've got for all the different occasions. We need a suitcase just to take the shoes with us, and the different types of clothes. In the olden days, 78 years ago, there's one cabinet, all the clothes in the house fit into that cabinet. So we're living really a life that's without starting with technology, how easy technology makes our lives. Right? We're wealthy beyond belief. We have riches nowadays, everyone, which far exceeds our needs as a society, as individuals. We are far, far beyond what people 100 years ago could have dreamt or could have imagined. If you tell a person 100 years ago, the way we live, with a washing machine, with a dryer, with a dishwasher, and all the modern comforts that we have, our mattresses, our clothing, they'll say, if I'd have all that, I'd be the happiest person on earth. And again, the question, with all of this, are people happy? Throughout the ages, they suffered from constant war, battles, tremendous difficulties. We're living in a free society, unlimited opportunity. The type of life we live today, people are seeking for centuries. Throughout history. And studies show that we're not happier than people were 200 years ago. In the last 50 years, income has doubled in real terms, and it's very clear there's no improvement in any way in the amount of happiness people have. What is pshat? What is missing? You read all the books now and the stories about people who win the lottery. Apparently 80% of people who have won the lottery are back at the old jobs after buying everything and going everywhere and doing everything. In different parts of the world, they all slowly gravitate back to the old jobs and to the old life if they've got seichel. The ones who don't either end up committing suicide or living in tremendous difficult circumstances. What is missing? But Emerson, this is a question that psychologists have asked for centuries. And the answer is, in three words, in a pasuk in Keheles. And it's something which really every person needs to be conscious of, because being conscious of it can make a difference to our lives. And these three words answer the questions we're asking. We're asking that Akshpoch created the world in such a way that there are 500 times more goodness than badness. And the thing is, we don't feel it. Shmuel definitely wanted us to be happy. And if he wants us to be happy, it's definitely possible for a person to feel happiness and find Simchas HaChaim. And the third point, we are living a very luxurious life, an easy life, against what people were living years ago. Why hasn't that contributed to our level of Simchas HaChaim? In Pasuk state three words. And the Medrash Keheles on that Pasuk brings a gewaltige moshel. It's brought down in Mrs. Shorim and Perik Aleph in a few words. But really, if we think in the moshel a little bit more than the few words that the Mrs. Shorim brings down, we can appreciate the moshel and really take that moshel and live it. The Medrash brings a moshel about a princess who was living in a palace, brought up in a palace, living there for many, many years. She had every type of luxury possible. The way she dressed, her jewelry, the beautiful bed, a comfortable bed. And of course, the food she ate was prepared by chefs, cooks, and served to her in the most pleasant way, on bone china dishes, solid silver cutlery. She lived in the lap of luxury. And one day, she decided to take a walk beyond the palace gardens. And she went beyond the gardens into the woods behind the palace for the first time in her life, when she wandered into the woods. And after a short period of time, she decided to go back. She didn't realize she had lost her sense of direction. Instead of finding the palace, she realized she was heading deeper and deeper into the woods. Until the woods turned into a forest, and she was hopelessly lost. She was panicking, how am I going to get back to the palace? No way for her to work out. And she realized the sun is slowly arcing its way across the sky, it's soon going to start getting dark. Where am I going to sleep tonight? And it started getting dark, the first time in her life, she had to try and sleep on a hard forest floor. She wasn't used to such a type of life, such a type of bed. But she's hopeful the next morning she'll find the palace. She wakes up the next morning after not sleeping much with all the noise in the forest. And she's starving, hungry. She's desperate for food. She forces herself to eat some mushrooms, some berries she finds in the forest. Far cry from the normal breakfast she had in the palace. And one day turns into two, and two into three, and a few days into a week. And after a few weeks, there's a month, and 2 months. After many months, she's now shabby, her clothes are torn, her jewelry's lost, her hair's unkept. She doesn't look anything like a princess anymore, and she's floundering away, not meeting anyone in this vast forest. After many, many months, she stumbles upon a clearing, and she sees a shack. First time in her life, in a few months, she's seen a structure, and she goes into the shack, dilapidated shack, there's some sort of bed in the corner, and she lies down on the bed and falls asleep. She wakes up a few hours later. She sees a peasant standing over her. She's terribly frightened. But the peasant smiles, seems to welcome her. They couldn't even speak the same language. She must have wandered into a different country. And the peasant motions she's welcome to stay. She stays for a few weeks, and the peasant motions that he would like to marry her, and they marry. And the peasant sees she's always unhappy, and he tries to make her happy. So he takes from the forest a few little pieces of wood, and he carves them out into circles and strings them up with some reed. He presents her with a necklace. She smiles out of Menschlichkeit, but when she sees that necklace, she thinks of a diamond necklace, the pearls she used to wear. The peasant can sense that she's not really happy. He tries his hardest to make her happy. He takes wood and carves out a nice bowl, so smooth he sands it down the best as he can to give her something which she can eat from comfortably. But she looks at the coarse bowl and she thinks to herself, this bowl, a wooden bowl, a wooden spoon, she's used to eating from bone china, the silver cutlery. It was meaningless to her. Her asogas were so far removed from the peasant's asogas. And the peasant tries to weave her some clothes. And again, she's repulsed even to try them on. She's used to a completely different life. And there's nothing the peasant can do to make her happy. Because her mind is in the palace. The peasant's got no idea where she comes from. Doesn't understand what it means, a life of luxury. He's got no understanding at all in what her needs are. And she's got no understanding in the peasant's way of life. This is a moshel that the Medrash Kelas brings. And the nimshel is that we are both the princess and the peasant together. We are the princess and the peasant merged into one. The two components that make up the human being. One is the guf, the nefesh habahami, which the Derech Hashem writes is also physical. We have our guf, our physical guf. We have our desires, which is also physical. Although it's not tangible, you can't feel it and touch it, it's also physical, the Derech Hashem writes. On the one hand, we have our physical body with our nefesh habahami. The nefesh habahami that we have, the animal soul, has been programmed to desire all that man needs to keep alive and functioning in this world. It's designed not like in an animal which is set at a certain intensity. You never see an animal which overindulges because it's set at a certain intensity. The human being's desires are not set at any level. The more he goes after desires, the greater they become. There's no limit. That's one part of the human being. The other part is a chelek elekai mimal, which comes mitachas kisei hakovod. When we read on Shavuos Naf Torah, remember, as a bocher, when I used to look in the art scroll translation on the Af Torah, on the translation, and it speaks about the maisim rekova, kilak shpochus coming, and the whole entourage before he comes. Then it says, Val hakisei kidmus odom. I remember thinking, what does that mean, that pasuk? Val hakisei kidmus odom. On the throne was the form of a human being. Never understood it. Then I learned Ruach Chaim once, and I saw how he explains it. Val hakisei, on the kisei hakovod kidmus odom. He means the human being. That's where the human being comes from. Higher than the srofim, higher than from the ifanim. The neshama comes from the kisei hakovod, from the highest sphere. And this neshama, which is a chelek elekai mimal, is, as I heard once a choshvid say, it's literally inserted into a gorilla. That's what it's inserted into. So our makeup is comprised of these completely two opposites. The neshama, the chelek elekai mimal, and the guf, which is like an animal with its animalistic desires. And the two chalokim have different desires. That means what we're saying is the conscious I that sees and thinks. We think of ourselves as I. We're comprised of both these components which have been merged into one, merged together. The human body, the Nefesh HaBahami, desires what's here and now. It can only relate to what's revealed and obvious. And only can relate to physical pleasures. That's all it knows about, that's all it wants, like the peasant in our story. That's all the human being wants, to indulge in pleasures. I'll never forget sitting on a train once. Years ago, I used to go on a train to speak to the guy next to you. What do you do? Where you're from? You know, like a bit small talk, and it's interesting, interesting sometimes to speak. Now you go on a train, everybody's busy with their various different technologies. I'm watching things and there's no talk. I don't know why I need a quiet carriage anymore. I don't see any talking taking place in other carriages either. I was next to a guy, I got in there, he was sitting on the inside. I sat down, he was engrossed in his little piece of technology, the entire journey to London. When I got to London, I jumped off, I don't know what he did. But I just thought to myself, and that probably is true, he was sitting with his hoodie right over his head, couldn't see his face. I think if you would cover him with a blanket and put a feeding tube up his nose into his stomach, I reckon he could stay like that for the rest of his life, right? Because that is his life. That's the Nefesh HaBahami and the Guf. The Neshama of us, which we don't feel so easily, it's cloaked in a big level, a thick level of physicality, desires something completely different. Every pleasure is coarse and unattractive. It's unmoved by all the money. It means nothing to him. It's the princess. You can't please it with a wooden bowl, with a necklace made out of beads. This part of us also hungers for purpose and meaning. And as Chazal tell us, more than anything, the neshama craves a relationship with its creator, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we have two parts of us which are each craving different things. It's not just they're craving different things. They're not interested in what the other part is craving, what the other part desires. If we don't understand this makeup, we don't understand ourselves. People often feel they've got a dual personality, something wrong with them. Right? Sometimes they're davening tremendous kavana, and half an hour later they're fressing at a kiddush, and they're looking for the best thing to eat, and they don't understand, who am I, what am I? Is there something wrong with me? I've got multiple personalities. The answer is no. There's two parts to us. Sometimes the neshama's in control, sometimes the guf is in control. Nothing wrong with us. We can't talk away our good Shemoneh Esrei because we chapped in a kiddush afterwards. It's not a contradiction. There's just two parts. Sometimes this, sometimes that thing. Each vying for control. So we're comprised of two components that desire different things and are not interested in what the other desires. And this is where the answer lies to why people aren't happy in life. The Pasuk writes three words, V'al nefesh lo yisimoleh. That's the Pasuk in Keles. The soul, the neshama, is not getting filled. Generally, in the world, a person thinks, even when I'm successful, I've got enough money or gashmias, I think I'm not happy because I need more. I'm still lacking, I'm still missing. If I have more, I'll be happy. And that's generally the way people look at life. If I have more, I'll be happier. They don't realize that there's another part of them which is not being satisfied and feeling fulfilled. And the neshama makes itself known that it's not happy and it's not having its desires met. This is why people have such a difficult time enjoying this world. Of course, momentary indulging in physical pleasure gives it a certain sense of enjoyment. I once saw a story about a kid, a young Schwarzenegger, who's starving in South Africa during a big famine in the 1920s. He was starving, hungry, hadn't eaten for days. He felt faint and weak. And he passed by one of those mansions which belonged to the white people, and he saw the beautiful lawn in front of the mansion. He saw a sprinkler watering the grass. And he walked up to the sprinkler and pulled off the pipe from the sprinkler and stuck it down his throat. And he drank and drank and drank and drank until the water started coming back out. He realized he was full. And he walked away and he felt full like he'd never felt before in his life. He was full. But that lovely feeling of fullness didn't last very long. After a short period of time, the water passed through his body, and then he said he felt a hunger he had never felt in his entire existence. And that's like a nice moshel. When the person thinks, it's the physical pleasures that I need to nourish myself, that will make me happy. It makes me happy for a short period of time, but it often makes me feel even emptier than before. That's the three words that can make a big difference to a person's life. Chukwu wants us to enjoy life. He wants us to enjoy life. That's why he created life in such a way, the world such a way that we can enjoy it, we're supposed to enjoy it. But if we don't nourish one most important part of ourselves, we're not going to feel the simcha that a person can feel in his life. There's got to be a balance. We've got to make sure that the neshama is also being nourished continuously. It's going to be a balance. We can, and Hashem will want us to enjoy the physical world, as long as we keep it set at a certain level, not overdoing it. We let our seichel and neshama control how much we indulge, but we can enjoy it if it's coupled with a spiritual dimension in life. This famous psychologist, Viktor Frankl, which apparently people who study psychology nowadays, a lot of it's based on his works and his writings. This Viktor Frankl was a Yid who lived in Europe before the war, a secular Jew. He went through the camps, Nebuch, and he wrote a biography about himself in the later years of his life. And he writes, he went through the camps, he writes about his experiences. And he writes, he eventually arrived on American shores, and as he was very famous from before the war, he felt confident to open a practice in Manhattan to help people. He was a famous world psychologist, written many books on psychology. And I saw an extract from part of his book, how he writes about, he opened a practice in Manhattan and charged an exorbitant fee, about $100 in those days, remember what it was, for an hour, and he had people queuing up at his door. He had people queuing up at his door, though he was charging an exorbitant fee, and he was trying to rebuild his life. And he said that the people who could afford that fee were the affluent and richest people who lived in that part of New York. And he says, most of the conversations went as follows. Good morning, sir. What's your name? How are you feeling? How's your... He asked, how's your health? He said, fine. How's your marriage? He said, fine. How are the children? Fine. And he went through the whole list of questions, and everything was fine. So he said to him, so what are you coming to me for? He said, I'm feeling depressed. I don't feel a level of simcha that I would like. And he writes that people that came to him lacked meaning in life. He writes, my conclusion is his word, I think. My conclusion from a psychiatric point of view is that man without meaning will feel depressed. At the core of his essence, he feels empty. The only hope is to find meaning and purpose in life. Only then can he be happy. And he finished off with the question, what is that purpose? What is that purpose? So he was a secular Yid, didn't understand. But the people who learn Chazal, we learn Divrei, of the Svarim, which tell us how to feel and get that happiness, elusive happiness, which is so hard to find. And we find it in three words in the Pasuk in Keres, the way the Medrash Keres explains it. Mrs. Sharm brings it out, that in order to feel satisfaction in life, a person will feel it through giving what the neshama desires. If the neshama is lacking in its desires being filled, fulfilled, it's going to let itself show the person, it's going to make the person feel an unfulfilled life, an unhappy feeling. Because we are comprised of both these components, and that is the conscious I which thinks and feels. It's comprised of both components. When we forget about the chelik elakayim imal, then we're going to continuously feel that the way to find happiness is to fulfill desires of the guf. It's not going to happen. Avada, it's hard to feel the neshama. Also, a moshel, it's a person standing in the freezing cold weather with gloves and mittens on top. He's freezing cold. And the bus is coming. And he puts his hand into his pocket to try and take out the right amount of change to pay for the bus fare. And he can't feel any coins at all. Is anything wrong with his hands? Or his hands not in those gloves? Of course they're there. There's nothing wrong with his hands. Just covered in layers and layers of material, which doesn't enable him to be able to use, to feel his fingers and his fingers to connect to the coins in his pockets. The human being is cloaked with such a thick level of physicality. We've got to know, be a deer, we've got to know, sometimes we can connect, we can feel it, but usually we can't feel it. We've got to know it's there, and even though we can't feel it the way we would like to, we've got to try and connect that the reason why most people in the world are so unhappy because they're not fulfilling themselves beruchnias. Everybody, the few madrigals, has got to try and fulfill which they can do in the chelik of ruchnia that they can accomplish. That is the answer how a person can feel accomplished and enjoy life. It's not just we don't appreciate the luxury life that we're living today. We don't appreciate the wonderful body Akshbohu gave us. It's much deeper than that. It's not that it's a lack of appreciation. It's because we're not in touch with ourselves. We don't realize, we're not realizing there's a major part of us which is not having its needs met. When we fulfill those needs, then a person feels a tremendous simcha. That Sfasemus writes many times, when a person controls himself in his desires, he has a tremendous simcha. And many years I struggled with that. Where does that simcha come from? What's the meaning of that simcha? And the Teretz is poshut. When a person controls himself from his desires, that simcha that comes because the neshama feels fulfilled. It's a major part of him that feels fulfilled. So the answer to our questions are very simple. About Akshmach, who wants us to enjoy life, he created 500 times the amount of goodness versus bad, and it's achievable. But we have to understand ourselves, who we are, what's our makeup. When we understand this very simple point of our nefesh l'simole, it's possible for every person to achieve a tremendous level of simcha zachayim, which Akshmach wants us to have in this world.
Amen. 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 Amen.